what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this evening our guest is Webster Tarpley. And Webster Tarpley is a historian. We've had the privilege of having him on several of our previous programs. And tonight we're going to be talking about what happened on 9/11. Now, those of you who've seen the Alex Jones presentation shown about three times at least on C-SPAN, where they had a panel of four experts, certainly one of them, Professor Stephen Jones, and one of those four experts was Mr. Tarpley, and he did a great job of presenting the reasons why we have not been told the truth. If we have not been told the truth about what happened on 9/11, that means the invasion of Afghanistan was not necessary, the invasion of Iraq was not necessary, that the 9/11 incident was used to justify getting us into a war. In fact, if you read Condoleezza Rice's testimony before the 9/11 commission, in essence, she said, you know, the reason we didn't do anything as far as Afghanistan, as far as Al-Qaeda was concerned, was because the American people weren't ready for it. You were going to have something come along that would change their attitude, that change their perception of everything. And until that happened, the American people, in essence, weren't going to go along with our taking action against Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda. Well, something did happen. It happened on 9/11. And the interesting thing is, according to Secretary Rumsfeld, the plan for what the Bush administration was going to do was completed on September 10th and was on the president's desk. And exactly 27 days after the plan was completed on the 10th of September, the day before the attack, we had troops in Afghanistan. Now, how could that possibly have happened? How could we have gotten our troops there that quickly? How could we have gotten our aircraft carriers in position, our supply routes intact, so that within 27 days of the completion of the plan, 26 days after why the attack on 9/11, we had troops attacking Afghanistan? That is the most amazing military feat. Or it was all planned ahead of time. Well, that is the background. Webster Tarpley, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Stan. It's good to be here.
Well, let's get your thoughts on what happened, because I suspect we have not really been told the truth. Do you have that same feeling?
Well, absolutely, and that is what I've written this whole book about, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. And it's impossible, naturally, to go through it under these conditions of about an hour, and I think there are other urgent things we ought to talk about that are more in the news immediately now. Let me just say, the finding I have in the book, of course, is that the 9/11 terrorist attacks were a massive war provocation. They did not come from bin Laden. They did not come from a cave in Afghanistan. They had nothing to do with the 19 patsies who were presented by the FBI a couple of days later, but rather they were a war provocation from the bowels of the CIA, the National Security Agency, the FBI, and so forth. And the goal of this was to get the War of Civilizations, which is what we've seen, and it's taken us now to the brink of World War III, where we are now.
But, of course, they never could have gotten the America into the war had it not been for what happened on 9/11.
It remains the foundational story. And if you don't address 9/11, and I say this to the peace movement, if you don't address 9/11, you are guaranteed to fail.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Webster, you pick up the story there.
Well, then, I would just point to the fact we have these September criminals in power. And since 9/11, they have been addicted to terror in the same way that a heroin addict is addicted to heroin. And the big problem they have is that the greatest advantage of a terror attack like 9/11, a state-sponsored, false-flag, synthetic terrorism attack, coming obviously from the U.S. intelligence community with all of those huge resources, hundreds and hundreds of people, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of expenditure. It could only have been the U.S. intelligence community shutting down the air defense of the northeastern United States for an hour and 45 to an hour and 50 minutes, depending on the timeline you want to use. there's no doubt that this comes from inside the U.S. government. It's a network. It's a faction. It doesn't necessarily have to be everybody. The idea was Samuel Huntington's thesis: that if you want to have a society based on tremendous injustice like this one, with hierarchies and plutocracies and oligarchies running everything, then you have to have a foreign enemy, an enemy image, so you can unload all of the tensions in the society on that foreign image. Same idea that Orwell had in 1984, really. And also then, the idea that there are real challengers to U.S.-British world domination, at least in its present form, and that these would be, first of all, China, because of their economic growth, but even before that, the Arab and Islamic world, because of the demographic growth that they have, that their populations are increasing relatively rapidly compared to the U.S. and the British and Western Europe and so forth. And then behind that, of course, as Wolfowitz adds and as Wolfowitz doctrine, the Russia, because of their military power. So that's 5 years ago now. And so for five years, we have lived under the rule of these terrormongers, fearmongers. And the problem that they face is the great advantage of the terror attack is the shock that it produces the first time around. But now all of that shock has worn off to a significant degree, especially as the people who have organized these things, this rogue network or invisible government, as I call it, they've had to have recourse to the same scare tactics again and again and again. I think Keith Olbermann on his television program this week put together 10 cases where Bush and company had called extraordinary terror alerts, like red alerts, orange alerts, based on really their own political needs. A couple of examples: after Kerry named Edwards as his running mate, within 2 days there was a hysterical terror scare and terror alert. And when John Kerry was nominated...
Hold that off right there. Okay. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Webster Tarpley, and Webster is simply pointing out that, you know, what happened on 9/11 is what has gotten us into this terrible, terrible war and may very well plunge us into World War III. And, of course, this is a standard technique. You have to have an enemy to rally the people behind you. You have to have an enemy before the people are willing to give up their freedom. And Webster is pointing out that time and time again, the administration is coming up with a terror threat. And mentioning, of course, that certainly during the campaign in 2004, after John Kerry had picked Edwards as his running mate, immediately there is a dramatic terror threat again. You pick up the story there, because we've seen these terror threats time and time again. The latest one, I just have to comment. I mean, here, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, that how can you justify what they're doing at the airports now? Supposedly we have to give up all the fluids, we can't take them on the plane. It's perfectly all right to put them in your check-through baggage, where, of course, you want to put nitroglycerin or bombs. That's all right, we don't check that, but you can't carry them on the plane, and the reason you can't carry them on the plane is because they've arrested all the people involved with the terror plot. Supposedly they were going to carry people, explosives onto the plane. So if they've arrested all the people, why suddenly are they making all the law-abiding citizens give up fluid to going out of the plane? That just doesn't make sense.
And indeed, this is where I wanted to get to. The point is that we've seen Olbermann list 10 cases, again, stepping on Kerry's convention bounce, stepping on the little blip that he might have had through the naming of Edwards, was typical then. But now we have a different kind of situation. We have a situation where Lieberman, about 10 days ago, had been spectacularly defeated in that Connecticut primary, and at the same time there were 150 backbench Labor Party members of Parliament who were calling for Tony Blair to be ousted based on the way he had behaved. The British, of course, have significant interests in the Arab world. Right? If you look at all those little states in the Gulf, right, the Emirates, Oman, Dubai, Qatar, those are all British puppet states, Kuwait, they created all of them, and they've got very important interests there. So there's a great backlash against Tony Blair. Now, there are two things to be said, I think, about this latest terror stunt, the Heathrow London plot with the liquids. The first is that this plot has crumbled based on the fact that there is absolutely no evidence behind it. I think we can sum it up by saying that if you look at the suspects that they have, about 25, they have found no chemicals in the home. They have found no bomb, no chemicals, no explosives in the home of any of these people. Most of them didn't have passports, so it would have been impossible for them to get on an airplane. And we're told that the British Passport Bureau works very, very slowly. So if you don't have it now, you're not going to have it within the foreseeable future. So no chemicals, no bombs, no passports, and above all, no tickets. Not one of them seems to have had a ticket to get on any airplane. So we're left with what? We're left with basically nothing. A terror plot that is manufactured out of nothing, and the hysterical reports that have thrown the entire world of civil aviation across the planet into chaos are based, obviously, on hearsay reports from double agents that have penetrated these groups. Now, let me just jump to the outcome. The Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain, a guy called John Prescott, who is the person running that country when Tony Blair is on his vacation at the home of Sir Cliff Richard in Barbados, which is where he is now, Prescott said to a group of Muslim MPs on the 15th of August, he basically said, "Don't worry, boys, because most of the people who have been arrested will not face charges. Or if they face charges, they will be very minor charges. Maybe, I'm thinking, library books found overdue in their homes when they were combed through, or parking tickets found unpaid, or some other trivial infraction that they found in the course of looking for these explosives or the nitroglycerin and so forth, which they simply didn't find." So Prescott said to these Muslim MPs, members of Parliament, "I would be very surprised if all of them face charges. So some of them are going to get off. Some of them are going to have these very minor charges." So again, here's the Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain saying, a lot of these people that we've rounded up, we will have to let go again. This is quite shocking. Now, the Asia Times has an article that goes through the fact that some of these Pakistanis of British birth, the people that have been rounded up and accused, had gone to Pakistan to be relief workers during the recent earthquake last year. And at that time, they became involved with a group called El Mujahiroon. And this El Mujahiroon is something that we know very, very well, because that is a product of the two infamous mosques in London, Brixton Mosque and Finsbury Mosque. And I have been writing about this stuff since, the middle 1990s. By about 1995, everybody in the world in intelligence matters knew that Brixton Mosque and Finsbury Mosque were two schools for terrorist patsies that had been set up in London by MI5 and MI6. And the way they did this was they had radical imams who were agents of MI5 and MI6, British agents with a cover of being imams, so I guess double agents in that sense, and they were allowed to go into the British prisons as imams and recruit the poor wretches that they found languishing in these awful prisons of the British and make them then into people like, Richard Reid is one of them. Richard Reid is somebody who was a mentally retarded man. This is the shoe bomber, of course. He was found sleeping on the floor of Brixton or Finsbury, I can't remember which, and then they prepped him up and they got him to go and do the shoe caper. This guy Moussaoui that we saw on trial in Alexandria, Virginia, is also a product of Brixton Mosque, Finsbury Mosque. And above all, the head of this El Mujahiroon, who was a habitué of the Brixton-Finsbury axis, is Omar Bakri, who was the official spokesman for bin Laden in London in 1998 after the embassy bombings, and I think he was still functioning as bin Laden's and al-Qaeda's official spokesman in London into 1999 and perhaps even beyond that. So it turns out that these poor wretches, these Pakistanis, whoever they were, went to Pakistan for earthquake relief. They fell into the orbit of El Mujahiroon and Bakri, and according to an article in Asia Times, they were then approached by agent provocateur working for the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which is, of course, fine. That's the co-production of the CIA and MI6. But the main thing is this Mujahiroon, which takes you right back to London. So these poor characters, and I think most of them are dupes, some of them are fanatics, obviously some of them are psychotics, some of them may also be people who thought that they were taking part in a drill, that they were going to get money, in particular if they come forward with these martyrdom videos. Normally that is something that it's easy to get somebody to do, saying, here, let's make a tape of you and we'll use that as part of the drill. And then they instead use it as evidence. All of this seems to explain the story with this guy, Ralph, R-A-U-F, being the go-between between the 25 people arrested in London and the 7 people arrested, or 5 to 7 in Pakistan. Another group that comes into this is called Lashkar-e-Toiba, and Lashkar-e-Toiba is one of the many groups that operate in Kashmir, right? Kashmir is a part of the world that's occupied by the Indian government. They've been told to hold free elections. There are UN resolutions saying, India, hold free elections or else get out, and the Indians have never done it. But, of course, this is the category of UN resolutions that nobody cares about. So what we essentially have is the complete crumbling of this entire hysterical London plot of 1 week ago. And if you listen carefully to even NBC News, CBS News the last couple of nights, they've been talking about the fact that until yesterday, it was not clear that they would even be able to keep these people in jail, even under the draconian provisions of Blair's Prevention of Terrorism Act, where they can keep you in theory for 28 to 30 days. Blair had wanted 90 days, and he didn't get it last November, and his government almost fell over that. But the idea is that this whole plot is exposed now as manufactured out of absolutely nothing, a total frame-up, a total fraud from beginning to end. There's no proof. There's no evidence. Again, no chemicals, no bombs, no passports, no tickets. There's a late report tonight that somebody found a bomb in the woods near one of the suspect's homes. And I think, well, they've decided to plant something to sort of get themselves off the hook. But this whole thing now is a colossal scandal, because why did Chertoff and Bush and this regime over here run after this in the way that they did, right? Creating absolute chaos in so many airports, disrupting people's lives, causing mass hysteria, and this idiotic regime now of no hair tonic, no creams, no lipstick, just absolute Orwellian nonsense, right? And I really wonder how long the American people are going to put up with this now.
But, you know, I think, Webster, one of the problems we face is that a lot of people say, look, there must have been a real threat. Otherwise, they wouldn't have taken all these precautions, and without realizing that they're being totally manipulated.
Well, let's go back to the previous one. Let's say, what's the previous track record? What's the last outing of these same characters? On the 2nd of June, the same group, MI5, MI6, Scotland Yard, and John Reid being the British Home Secretary, they went to a place in London called Forest Glen. It's a suburb. And they had 250 bobbies with machine guns and a SWAT team. And they broke into the home of two brothers from Bangladesh, both Muslims. One of them came down the stairs to see what was happening. They immediately shot him in the chest, tried to kill him. The bullet went right next to his heart. And they said, okay, there's sarin gas here or there's potassium cyanide. They literally took the house apart for a week. They found nothing. The two brothers were released with no charges ever having been brought. So the last time they did this, at the beginning of June, was the same thing. And they said, oh, we did it all on the basis of a report from a single informant who was a guy with an IQ that is reported as 69. In other words, a mentally deficient, mentally retarded source. One source told them, oh, there's a bomb in that house. And they basically knocked the whole community on its ear. So that's their track record. They're bunglers, and above all, they're fakers, right? They manufacture plots.
We'll be right back in just a moment with Webster Tarpley. All right, Webster, pick it up from there.
Well, then this is all now the level of the evidence and the proof, right? As Sherlock Holmes or James Bond would say, there's absolutely nothing here, right? There is no case. They have nothing under any, you know, reasonable rules of evidence, habeas corpus. All of these people would be out on the street. And indeed, a lot of them will be out on the street before 3 or 4 weeks go by. A lot of these people are going to have to be released. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is a fascinating story, and I'm indebted to Wayne Madsen of Wayne Madsen Report for some of this. The question is, where did all this come from? So here's the idea. this was the product of Tony Blair's latest visit to Washington at the end of May. And you remember this. This was when Bush and Blair appeared in the White House together, and they gave a press conference, and it was surreal and Orwellian. And then Tony Blair went out to California to hobnob with various friends of his. Now, here's the idea. I find this, it's a very interesting commentary on the world we live in. I never would have thought that we'd find a situation where Prince Charles of Great Britain would come on the scene as the lesser evil. But that seems to be what we have. That it turns out that there's a clique in Britain that hates Blair and wants to get rid of him. And the head of the anti-Tony Blair clique is none other than Prince Charles. Prince Charles can't stand Tony Blair for a series of reasons. Now, Prince Charles has important allies, according to this report. He's got Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown is a very important politician in the Labour Party. Right now, he's the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's the Secretary of the Treasury. It's a very important post. He's the top money man of Great Britain. Also involved in the plot is this guy, John Prescott. We've just heard from him. Prescott was the one who told the Muslim MPs, don't worry, there's no evidence in the case. These people will all have to be released, or at least most of them will be, very, very soon. Prescott's name came up at the White House today in the briefing because Prescott had said, and I don't think I'm breaking any rules if I say it, but you tell me if I am, he said, Bush's policy is crap. Okay? So this is John Prescott, Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain. So the White House today, Tony Snow, was asked to respond to that criticism. So again, the lineup is Prince Charles, Gordon Brown, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, John Prescott, the enemy of Blair, but his Vice Prime Minister, Ken Livingstone, the extreme leftist Lord Mayor of London, George Galloway, who I think you've seen, the guy who came over here and debated Norm Coleman of Minnesota, and another Scottish Member of Parliament called Tommy Sheridan. This group wants to oust Blair, and they are behind this petition of 150 members of the Labour Party, the backbenchers, saying Tony Blair has gone too far in subservience and dog-like fidelity to Israel. That's okay for Bush, but here we can't do it because Britain has important interests in the Arab world that they need, and we don't want to give them up. On the other side, we have Bush, we have Blair, we have Rupert Murdoch, right, the nefarious head of Fox News, but also of Sky TV, which is the British equivalent of that, and we have this guy, John Reid, who is the Home Secretary. So he's the police minister, and if you've watched any of the British press conferences lately about this London terror bomb.
Hold that right there. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Webster is talking about what's really going on over in England. And apparently, Prince Charles has a group of people who really hate Tony Blair. They want to get rid of him. And these are some of the most important people in the British government are aligned against Tony Blair. And they're behind the fact that recently 150 backbench members of the Parliament, they would be members of the Labour Party, of course, have petitioned to have Tony Blair resign. Now, on the other side, of course, then you would have George Bush wants to keep Blair in power, Rupert Murdoch, and you pick up the story there.
And John Reid, the police minister who has come to the fore, because even though John Prescott theoretically is running the country, because he's the deputy prime minister, Tony Blair is in Barbados again for his vacation, just like Bush. They went vacationing at the same time, at the time of the plot. But the guy that you've seen on television is this character, John Reid, who, by the way, is a notorious ex-communist. He was a member of the Communist Party of Great Britain at Stirling University there, and he was basically a strong-arm character who would go around roughing people up if they didn't toe the party line. Now, here's the idea. The Prince Charles group hates Blair. They want to get rid of him. They also hate Bush, and they hate essentially the Israeli policy. And Prince Charles, according to these reports, has organized a series of European royal houses to oppose Bush and above all to snub him. Prince Charles, according to this, has been able to convince the royal houses of Spain, of Belgium, of Sweden, of Norway, and one or two others to boycott Bush. In other words, don't give him any invitations. Luxembourg, I think, is the other one, the Grand Duke of Luxembourg. So don't let Bush come into your country. Don't let Bush come into your palace. And apparently this has been noticed at the White House. Bush would have probably been glad to visit some of these places at various times, but they won't invite him because Prince Charles has told them not to. Now, here's the other thing about Prince Charles. Prince Charles, according to these reports, is virtually converted to Islam. And this is a big embarrassment for the War of Civilizations group. In other words, the neocons are not happy about the fact that Charles has turned to Islam. There's a school of thought to which I would actually subscribe that said that the reason that Princess Diana had to be assassinated was that she was about to marry Dodi Fayed, the son of the the significant department store baron in London, right? El Fayed had taken over Harrods department store in Knightsbridge, famous London department store. But that if Princess Diana had married Dodi Fayed, she would have converted to Islam, and then you would have had the Queen Mother, the Queen Mum of Britain, with her two sons, William and the other guy, both of them is going to be king someday, most likely, that the Queen Mum would be a Muslim. So how can you have the War of Civilizations if the Queen Mother of Great Britain is a Muslim? So she had to die. But it looks like this tendency is rooted in the royal family. Charles is supposedly a guy who likes to wear Middle East costume when he's at home. He likes to wear robes. And he is very close to various members of the Saudi Arabian royal family and also of the royal families of some of those emirates. I'm not sure which, but you can think of Kuwait, Dubai, Oman, Muscat, these sorts of places. So This is the picture with Charles. They hate Bush. They hate Blair. They want to get rid of him. It's a significant faction. And that is what Tony Blair had to try to counter. In other words, Tony Blair, when he came to the United States at the end of May, was essentially sure that if he didn't do something important to knock this group on its heels, that he would be out soon.
In other words, what they really needed was a major terrorist attack to make it look good.
But not even a terrorist attack. This is, as people in Europe have called it, this is the Reichstag fire with no fire. They weren't able to do it. They did do the following. They had an American Airlines plane, according to some reports. An American Airlines plane had somebody in it who had some kinds of paraphernalia of some sort that might have been considered explosive. And this guy, the pilot of the American Airlines flight, was told, fly to Boston and we'll arrest the guy there. And the American Airlines pilot refused. He turned back, and therefore they called off the discovery. In other words, they simply said, we'll just keep this quiet. We won't say anything about it. We'll just say that this had been a false alarm. So they tried to get a transatlantic incident, and when they couldn't do that, they then rounded up these people. Generally speaking, the story that the U.S. forced the British to arrest these people before they were ready is a cover story to cover up the fact that they have no evidence. In other words, the British say, we have no evidence because the bloody Yanks forced us to tip our hand too soon.
Well, of course, then we saw the episode of the arresting these terrible militant Islam fanatics who had 1,000 cell phones that were going to sell. We'll be back.
Yes, we'll get to them, too. We'll get to them.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Webster Tarpley. And go ahead, Webster. You pick up the story.
When Blair was in the United States, he met with a series of cronies, and that included Governor Schwarzenegger of California. It included, above all, Rupert Murdoch, this press baron, and Bush, and probably some others. It's interesting that there's a big vendetta between the Rupert Murdoch press empire and Prince Charles's operation at Clarence House in London. That's the digs where he operates from. There is a criminal case now, a reporter for the News of the World, which is the most lurid tabloid. I mean, I used to, when I was a kid, we used to get the News of the World at home, and the News of the World made the New York Daily News look like a highbrow, made the New York Daily News look like the New York Times in terms of, you know, the seriousness of it. It was the most lurid tabloid. Anyway, the News of the World, which is one of the biggest selling newspapers in the world, based on the, on this lurid content, this reporter has a criminal case against him for wiretapping Prince Charles and the rest of his family, presumably Camilla Parker Bowles and the two princes. So there's practically open war between Rupert Murdoch on the one side and Prince Charles on the other. And again, it's the idea that they have the neocons on the one side and this other group that doesn't like the prevailing policy. And it looks to me like the group around Prince Charles is saying, we don't want the Third World War, we don't want to be the tail on the Israeli dog or the tail on the Israeli kite or whatever it is. The briefing that was given to Bush in order to get him to support this was, of course, Bush, you've got to support your old friend Blair. If Gordon Brown comes in as prime minister, he would be one of the candidates to replace Blair from the Prince Charles side. The idea would be that the British would leave Iraq. They might leave Afghanistan, too. They would not be in the special relation with the United States, but rather they would orient towards the European Union. So this was obviously enough to get Bush enthusiastically on board with this London terror plot. The idea also is they would have told Bush, if Blair falls, you will go from having a friend to having an enemy, because he said, they told him, if you remember when Aznar fell in Spain, it went to Zapatero, who is now out of Iraq. When Berlusconi in Italy came down, you got Prodi, who is taking the Italians out of Iraq also. So, Bush, you've got to do something. We need to have a major terrorist provocation. So,
hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Mr. Webster Tarpley. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Webster Tarpley. Webster, before I go on, do you have a website you'd like to get out or any other information other than the fact that you've written a new book?
I would commend my two books, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. You can get this at Amazon.com. And also at Amazon.com is the other one, George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography, a reprint. The two of them together usually have a special discounted price, and if you buy them both, then you can also get free shipping, I believe, on Amazon.com. And I ask people who want to support my work to go to Amazon.com and buy it there if it's convenient, because the higher the numbers on Amazon.com, the more the chance that we'll eventually get into bookshops with these books, which is something that has eluded us so far. So, again, 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA and George Bush, The Unauthorized Biography, both available Amazon.com. I'm Webster Griffin Tarpley. You can find them. Just put Tarpley and you'll get both of them. So one is on 9/11 and the other is George Bush the Elder. And it's, I think, an important guide through the ins and outs of the Bush machine. So we were just going through and you brought up the question of the cell phone bandits. Now, this is a plot. This is another prize example of shameless puffery and shameless framing people up. The story here is that you've probably seen pictures of this Mackinac Bridge now on your television in the last couple of days. The Mackinac Bridge is a beautiful span. I've been over it myself a number of times. It goes from the mitten of Michigan to the upper peninsula of Michigan, right? If you want to go up and see the Sioux Canal, let's say, right on the Canadian border, the upper edge of the Great Lakes, you got to go across the Mackinac Bridge. It takes you right across the middle of the Great Lakes at a choke point. So the story is there were three Palestinian Arabs, I think American citizens anyway, from Texas, who were going around to Walmart in Ohio and Michigan, and they were buying what you can find is a $20 track phone, right, a cell phone, a cheap plastic cell phone for $20. And these guys had bought up about 600 of them, and they had paid $20 for them in all these Walmarts, so they were simply stocking up. And the FBI comes on the scene and says, aha, those are detonators. You are terrorists, and you want to blow up something, and we find here a picture of the Mackinac Bridge, that means you want to blow it up. I suppose if they'd found a picture of the guy's favorite dog, they would have accused him of wanting to blow up the favorite dog.
But you know the thing about that, Webster Tarpley, you only need one cell phone to blow up the bridge. I mean, the fact that they had 600 of them would have suggested they had another purpose. You only need one, and yet they have accused them of wanting to blow up the bridge because they had 600 cell phones. Now talk about stretching.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it obviously comes from the same group of script writers and scenario writers who did the Forest Gate in London on June 2nd with the two innocent Bangladeshis, one of them shot and almost killed, and also the Heathrow hoax, bogus sham, I suppose they'd call it. And now we've got the FBI. And, of course, what these guys wanted to do was the obvious, is that those phones that cost $20 here can be sold for hundreds and hundreds of dollars in different places in the Middle East, mainly for use as cell phones. And, of course, 600 indeed is too much unless you want to organize a big campaign. And there was no sign that they had the resources to do any of that. So in this case, the Ohio district attorney who had been investigating them has dropped all charges. There's no evidence, he says. And the FBI says there'll be no federal charges. And I'm wondering why these people have not simply been released. And I think they soon will. I think there's one other district attorney that still has to be heard from. So you look at this, though, what you can see is that the official version of 9/11 is simply collapsing. I think this has a lot to do with the program you mentioned on C-SPAN. It's actually with Alex Jones, Professor Stephen Jones, Professor of Physics at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah, Professor James Fetzer. He's a Professor of Philosophy Emeritus at the University of Minnesota. You've also got Colonel Bob Bowman, a rocket scientist, Ph.D. from Caltech, my heavens, who is running for Congress in the 15th District of Florida. I would also add, you know, David Ray Griffin, professor of theology, emeritus. So the 9/11 movement has an institutional, sort of respectable mainstream quality about it, which is, I think, causing Bush grave problems. So the answer to that is, If you find that your main ally, Lieberman, has been thrown out by the voters, if you find that 150 backbenchers are rebelling against Tony Blair and they want to oust him, and that Prince Charles is attempting to stage a coup, because that's what it comes down to, then, of course, what you need is a nice, big, whopping, juicy terror, hysteria, fraud provocation. And that's what they came up with. And people like Chertoff, of course, are guilty of tremendous malfeasance and nonfeasance in letting this go through. There will be lawsuits, and these will be interesting, right? The various airlines are going to sue the U.S. and British governments for what they've done in imposing these hysterical requirements. I think Ryanair, right, the European discount airline, the head of that, I think it's Ryan, is saying that he is going to lead the charge in putting in lawsuits, but also others, right? Who pays for this stuff, and what is it? And if the original case collapses, which is what's going on, most of those people are going to be released for absolutely no evidence against them. There are also no eyewitnesses, right? There's nothing. At most, there will be the testimony of one or two double agents or protected witnesses. There's also the question, any evidence you get from Pakistan obviously raises one question, torture. Because the Pakistani ISI will torture. They'll torture you as soon as they'll look at you. So anything you get from Pakistan is tainted with the idea that the guy was put on the rack and told what to do. So I think this is the very, very strange situation that we're in. Now, I would just maybe shift a little bit to the tremendous seriousness of the strategic situation. If you saw Bush the other morning saying Hezbollah attacked Israel, Hezbollah suffered a defeat, you saw somebody who is not living on this planet and is not living in the real world, because this is absolutely the opposite conclusion to what happened in the real world. That war was a defeat for the Israelis. As a matter of fact, according to David Martin of CBS News on Wednesday night, there is a report in the Pentagon which overwhelmingly concludes that in that war, Hezbollah defeated the Israelis. I would cite the Voltaire Network of my friend Thierry Maison. One of their sources from Moscow writes that when this Israeli invasion of Lebanon started, the Israelis had 7 armored divisions, and as a result of the combat that has gone on, the Israelis have lost 1 full armored division. 1 armored division has been destroyed. They've gone from 7 armored divisions ready to go to 6. And it turns out at the center of it, the Russian-made RPG-29 anti-tank rocket has proven more than a match for the Israeli Merkava 4 main battle tank, dozens of which have been destroyed, and they have been they now litter the landscape of southern Lebanon. And because of the activities of the Israeli military sensors, you have not seen the pictures of these Merkava tanks knocked out, destroyed, burned out, and so forth. Hezbollah has also employed the Metis missile, another one from Russia. They had the Milan missile, which is a NATO missile of the 1980s vintage, and the SA-18, another Russian one. This one was the one that shot down quite a few Israeli helicopters. So the losses, also the Israelis lost about 120 of their soldiers. If you want to get an idea of what that would look like in U.S. terms, you would have to multiply that by about 50, because the United States has about a population about a 50 times the size of that of Israel. So that gets you up to, to about 6,000. So if you had 6,000 casualties in the U.S. in 1 month or 5 weeks, that would give you an idea of what the Israelis have gone through. So therefore, when Bush says Hezbollah started it, Hezbollah was defeated, he is simply documenting the fact that he does not live in the real world. The other two slogans, I think, that are going to come back to haunt us from these past few weeks, when Bush said Islamo-fascism, he essentially guaranteed that he made himself about 1.2 to 1.3 billion new enemies. If they weren't enemies already, they were going to be enemies at that point. And I think that is going to come home to roost. And then, of course, Condoleezza Rice, and her slogan, the new Middle East, which has now been turned back against her with scorn and rage, not just by the head of Hezbollah, right, Sheikh Nasrallah, but also President Assad of Syria and Ahmadinejad and so forth. So this joins the unfortunate list of things like Axis of Evil, Bring It On, and so forth. But it's much worse than just this. I think most insiders would say that Bush is now in a psychotic fit. He's in a megalomaniac psychotic fit, and his goal right now is an early war with Iran and or Syria, but let's say with both, an early attack on Iran and Syria. Let me just mention what this means. If you attack Iran, you will be killing Russians in those nuclear facilities. You'll be killing Chinese in the oil fields. If you attack Syria, the Russians have got a naval facility at a port called Tartus on the Mediterranean, north of Lebanon, on the Syrian Mediterranean coast. There's also a report that the Russians have given the Syrians a surface-to-air missile battalion for their defense, and that Russians will be accompanying that one. So an all-out attack on Iran and or Syria is going to be a slippery slope into World War III. And you can see how this would work. Well, look what the Israelis did. I think we can say at this point that the U.S. military, the ones who are planning this attack, the Air Force and the neocon generals in the Pentagon, they think that they can do what the Israelis thought that they could do, which is to destroy Hezbollah in one case or Iran-Syria in another case using air power alone, the usual utopian doctrine pioneered by the British along with some Italian fascists back in the 1920s and 30s. And it won't work. And at that point, they will be faced either with military defeat or with a conventional land forces invasion and escalation, just like the Israelis were, except that the meat grinder called Iran is infinitely larger, of course, than little Lebanon. It is a huge country, 4 times the size of Iraq, with 3 times the population, with mountains, with bunkers, with depth, with enough place for millions and millions of soldiers to lose themselves forever. So if Bush insists on the attack on Iran, Syria, that will essentially mean simply the annihilation of large parts of the U.S. military establishment. It will mean an absolute catastrophe, and it will lead to retaliatory measures which are unimaginable under current circumstances, even though we've seen a little bit of a hint in terms of what Hezbollah was able to do to Israel. The neocons have a funny theory of war. The neocons see war as a one-way street. It's what you do to an enemy. But von Clausewitz, in his famous On War, right, from Krieger, reminds us that when you engage in warfare, you're dealing with an animate object that reacts to what you do, can react against you. And this is the part that I don't really want to discover. I don't want to ever learn what those retaliatory measures would be. And I think that we are now close to it. I note that we have this group, the 21 generals who have come forward. There are 21 generals, intelligence officials, State Department, and others who have come forward essentially with one message. Iran is not a crisis. And no bombing of Iran is needed. This includes General Hoare, who is the former commander of the U.S. Central Command. It includes General Gard. It includes Ambassador Richard Holbrooke, who is the nexus of Wall Street with the State Department. He was the bomber of Serbia. And now he's saying no. I think he's realized that Iran is quite a different proposition from Serbia. It also includes Morton Halperin, who's the guy who directs George Soros's foundation here in Washington, D.C. So 21 generals and others essentially saying to Bush, do not attack Iran. When you see this federal judge today ruling that no-warrant wiretaps are illegal, I think that gives you the same idea. There is a faction in the ruling class that includes these 21 generals and top officials, includes that federal judge, and includes a lot of others who are telling Bush, don't do it. Don't drive us off the precipice. Don't jump into the catastrophe of the Third World War. Don't feed your army into the meat grinder called Iran, or you will end up with precious little coming out. I think we're in an extremely unstable political environment. When the war ended, it was clear that there was a significant potential for a military coup in Israel, which would have been a coup generated with tremendous frustration against Olmert, Peretz, Livni, and the rest of these politicians who had run the war. Although, in reality, it was Halutz, it was the head of the Israeli general staff, who had dictated what the war looked like, not the politicians. So this would essentially be an action of scapegoating. Where we are right now in the United States, I think, is that there's a significant institutional, military, intelligence, State Department, and even financier resistance, again, because if you have Soros and Holbrook, you've got a significant part of Wall Street right there, who do not want the war with Iran. And they could say, we're losing in Afghanistan, we're losing in Iraq, we're losing in Lebanon. If you start the Third World War under these conditions, you'll damn well lose that too. And they are absolutely right. So this is the time when people who have any ability to influence these things should come out and do it. And again, the Trump card I would always play is 9/11 truth, because this essentially is the most vulnerable point in the entire Bush armor, right? It's the most dangerous flank for Bush, because if you simply protest against the wars per se, Bush is going to be ready for you, and Rupert Murdoch and Fox News are going to be ready for you. But if you add in that notion that the September criminals running this country owe their power to what they did on 9/11, then I think you can begin to reach into the 35 or 40% of the population who still support Bush simply because they are terrified. They believe in these hoaxes, right? They believe there was going to be a bomb on an airplane in London, or they believe that these three Palestinians from Texas were going to use their cell phones for nefarious plots.
All 600 of them.
All 600.
Take that bridge out.
And by the way, we have the 22nd of August, the intelligence circuits are buzzing. The 27th of Rajab, the day that Mohammed mounted the winged horse Burak, is supposed to be the beginning of the Third World War. So I would urge everybody, don't let it happen.
Well, I wonder if they're just playing games with our minds.
I'm sure they are.
And I think that what we have to understand is that we have people in the White House who really are intent upon an attack on Iran. Everything points in that direction. If this were to happen, why, it could very well bring the wrath of 1.3 billion members of the Islamic faith down on America. And America, I fear, would just never be the same again.
Quite right.
Webster, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, I want to thank you for the time. I guess that we've had 3 hours in the last week or 10 days, and I appreciate it very much.
You're a great guest, and I really enjoy having you. And you've got a great deal to offer. I understand you're doing a call-in program now, your own?
Yes, please, if you have to, on Saturday afternoon, I trust I'm not competing with you, on RBN, Republic Broadcasting Network, rbnlive.com, every Saturday afternoon from 5 to 7 Eastern time. So Pacific, it's from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, and you can interpolate the rest.
Well, you're not going to be competing with me, because we are all in this together. We either educate the American people or we lose America. It's just that simple, and it's all additive. What you're doing is really great, getting the information out.
And again, my book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, Made in USA, that's available at Amazon.com, as is George Bush, the Unauthorized Biography, I think an important document in profiling the dynasty. It's one of the main anti-dynasty books that you can get.
Well, I think, of course, people begin getting at the background of the Bush family and Prescott Bush, his relationship, you know, to this Brown Brothers Harriman, and, of course, their relationship to the Nazi party and the Nazi movement. In fact, that would be very embarrassing if it was brought out, but isn't it amazing how the New York Times and so many of the other major liberal publications, which you would think would be using it against the wicked right-winger George Bush, just sort of ignores all of that?
And indeed, if you look at Skull and Bones, there's a big chapter on Skull and Bones in my book on George Bush. Skull and Bones is a satanic death cult. It is a necrophiliac cult with very strong and very evident satanic overtones. And then that was your choice in 2004. You could choose between John Forbes Kerry of Skull and Bones or George Walker Bush of Skull and Bones. And both of them were following the rules that they were not allowed to tell anybody about Skull and Bones. So they were observing strict Skull and Bones discipline. This is not encouraging about the fate of democracy or indeed of human life in this part of the world.
And, of course, the thing is that they have no loyalty to America. Their primary loyalty is to this a satanic secret society they belong to. And when you talk about a satanic secret society, a lot of people look at you, their eyes glaze over, but let's call it what it is.
No other word for it. It is satanic, and of course they have human remains inside this crypt, which is what they call it, in New Haven. You can go and see it. You can at least, you know, inspect it from the outside. And this is where they have the skull of Geronimo, plus other human remains that are kept and used as part of their ceremonies. And you can look at various books. There's a lot of photographic evidence that when they have the weakest.
Hold that thought for. I'm going to have to let you go here.
Okay.
Well, our guest has been Webster Tarpley, and if you'd like to get the entire tape of this, of course, it is available through Radio Liberty. Webster, thanks very much. I hope we can get you back on again.
Thank you, Stan. Hope to see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's Webster Tarpley, and certainly a very, very excellent source of information. We commend his material to you. Now, if you would like to know more about Skull and Bones, we have a 4-tape set on Skull and Bones. Actually, an interview with a woman whose father and grandfather came from Skull and Bones. The interview with Alexandra Robbins, who had written the classic book about Skull and Bones, actually talked to people who had actually seen their secret ceremonies with the black hoods and the black robes and the candles and the strange pagan chants and the threat against this woman's life. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about reality. We're not talking about Hollywood movie. We're talking about reality. And the president and his opponent in 2004 both came from this same secret satanic organization. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope that many of you will want to get a new book we're carrying. It's called Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil. It's a book that really had a profound impact on my life in the early 1980s when I read it. It was written by a man I'd never heard of, Father Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest. And then, of course, later on, I came to know Malachi, and we have a four-tape set of interviews with Malachi. And one of them, of course, he talks about this feigned satanic sacrifice in the basement of the Vatican and the smoke of Satan that circulates over the top of the Vatican. Here is a man who is a loyal Catholic, but he recognized the satanic influence there. You can either get the four tapes set, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, or the book, Hostage to the Devil. It's an extensive coverage of five exorcisms, and when you read those, this story, based upon actual facts, is not made up. It's based upon the Catholic records of these five exorcisms. I promise you, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. You can get them separately, or you can get them together at a decreased price. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's called the Father Malachi Martin Special, or you can get simply the four tape sets, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, or Hostage to the Devil. But I recommend this book. We've been wanting to carry it for a long time. We now have it available, and it will begin to introduce you to this whole other world that Webster alluded to when he was talking about Skull and Bones, because there really are satanic organizations out there. If you haven't seen our four tape set on the Bohemian Grove, or we're carrying Alex Jones' latest video on the Skull and Bones, of this brotherhood of darkness. Anyway, you just ask for Alex Jones on Skull and Bones. We're carrying his DVD. We think it's very well done. You'll actually see the ceremony. Alex risked his life to go in there, and I applaud him for doing it. And you'll see the men there with their black robes and their hoods and their candles and their strange chants and feigned human sacrifice, or, well, we assume it's a feigned human sacrifice. And these are the leaders of our country. We're talking about presidents. We're talking about secretaries of state like Henry Kissinger and some of the most wealthy men in our nation. And of course, he interviews, of course, David Gergen, who is White House counsel, and shows you in this article where David Gergen talked about how they were simply out there running around naked, quoting from the tapes, the White House tapes, with Richard Nixon, who really didn't like the organization, but went there because he really wanted to rub shoulders with these people, and talked about the homosexual, I won't use the words that he used, but the homosexual overtones of this organization, where the leaders of America and the world meet on a regular basis. That is, of course, Alex Jones' video on Bohemian Grove, our four tape set on the Skull and Bone, and of course there's so much more information on the satanic organizations. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, and with the book, the video, our number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, right now we have with us on the line Melody Cederstrom, and we're going to be talking about what's going on financially in our country. Hi, Melody. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm just doing great this evening. Thank you.
Well, except that lots of things are going on in the world. Certainly, we find that the housing market's not doing as well as it was. Recently, in San Francisco for this last year, the prices of houses have gone up about 3%. Now, the prices are still going up in San Francisco because it's one of the most expensive places in the entire nation to live. But last year, the prices were going up 10%. Now they're going up about 3%. And I think in many places across the country, why people are selling their homes have to really make all sorts of concessions. It's become a buyer's market, not a seller's market as it was. And the sellers are having to pay for the closing costs and make concessions. Or it's not like it used to be where, you know, there would be, you know, four or five people bidding on a house. And many times you get far more for the house than you're asking for it. Although I understand in Seattle there's still a pretty good market, but in so many areas of the country, why, they're having real problems with housing. And then, of course, the raises that people are getting really aren't keeping up with inflation. Even the federal government raises this year are not going to be as much as they have been proportionally in the past. And as we then see what's happening to our industry, we find that General Motors is moving factories into Mexico. They're already in India, South Korea, China. General Motors will soon be the biggest automobile producer throughout the rest of the world, but not that, well, they're still the largest producer in the United States, but we wonder how long. Certainly Toyota has edged out Ford as the second largest automobile producer. And, of course, all of this is because, of course, the wage scales here cannot compete, and even when Toyota comes in, why, they go into the low-wage states, so they can produce a lot more cheaply and a lot more economically than General Motors and Ford, who are having real troubles economically. Melody, what's your take on what's going on financially in our country?
Well, you're absolutely right to all the problems that you just mentioned facing the American people and the consumer out there. And when you have an economy that is based on two-thirds of consumer spending, and when you have people that have become wealthy through debt, when they have problems with their ATM machines, you're certainly going to see that filter through the rest of the economy. And the sad thing is, you know, they can't improve with their jobs. They can't get better jobs. They're not getting the raises that they need to get. Either their jobs are leaving overseas, so that they're really stuck. And I saw a report earlier this week to where the bankruptcy, last October, they changed the laws for the bankruptcy filings, and so we had sort of a quiet time after that. There were less filings after that law had been passed, but they are now coming back.
All right, what you're saying is that not as many people are going bankrupt because it's much more difficult to go bankrupt today than it was, say, last September. So they changed those bankruptcy laws because they realized what was going to be happening financially, and they didn't want people to be able to get out from under their debt as readily as they could before. Do you think that's a fair analysis?
Yes, but the pace of filings have picked up to 2,200 to 2,300 new filings per business day, more than four times the level of November 2005 after the bankruptcy law went into effect.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. And, of course, it's really as fascinating as we watch the stock market. And one day the stock market goes up a couple of hundred points, and almost all the stocks go up in unison, almost as if somebody was manipulating the stock market. And then we go a couple of days, and then the stock market will drop 50 points, and then 100 points, and then 150 points, and all the stocks go down together, almost as if somebody was manipulating the stock market. And then, of course, the stock market will turn around and go up again. And all the stocks, not the majority of the stocks, but almost all the stocks, and we're talking 4 out of 5 stocks, will go up on the same day. It's almost as if somebody is manipulating our stock market. What are your thoughts on that, Melody?
If you watch the market, as I do, every day throughout the day, it's so easy to see how it's manipulated. You can almost time your watch, and you can see the changes in the market, and it also in relation to the stock market and to the Dow and the NASDAQ, it is also in the gold market. If you can count down the time and set your watch to it to when you see the things change. I will see the gold market open very strong and come around the magic time of between 11:30. You'll see whatever changes that will happen that day in the gold market happen at that time. So it's very obvious anymore for those of us who see what's happening and know what is happening. Because, again, just as gold is a barometer to the economy, the Dow is symbolic to the people of this country. They feel comfortable and safe knowing that the Dow is above 10,000 or 11,000. You know, they think their funds, their mutual funds, their 401s are working for them, even though they're not. But they feel it's almost a safety net. And I often said that, something nasty could really happen to this country, but the first thing everyone does is they look at the Dow to see what the market is doing. And they don't realize that if they are in the market, if their pensions are in the market, if their mutual funds are in the market, that it is all being propped up, it is all being held up until they're ready for it to release it. I believe that you can call it the New World Order, you can call them the elitists, but they get their funding from Wall Street. So I look at it as we have funded the decline of this country, through Wall Street. And it's amazing how...
Hold that thought right there. We should bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Melody and I was just talking about how the market is manipulated, and of course there's something known as the Plunge Protection Team, which was authorized under the Reagan administration, and the whole idea was that, if the market started to drop precipitously, it could almost begin to feed on itself, and people who were buying on margin would have to sell, and then more people would have to sell, and as you saw the market plunging, people would act irresponsibly, they'd just sell out just to try to protect what they had, and so they authorized something called Plunge Protection Team. That's not what they called it, but that's in effect what it is, and it's a work between the Federal Reserve System and the Treasury and certain of our major banks and certain of our major stockbrokers, where they will come into the market and they'll manipulate it. If you and I were to do that, why, we'd go to prison. When they do it, well, they don't even want people to know what they're doing. But they do manipulate the stock market, they do manipulate the commodities, and they certainly are manipulating the price of gold, because gold has always been the barometer of the value of money. And if gold were where it should be, it would be close to $2,000 an ounce, at least. And, of course, they're not going to let it go up there, because if that should happen, it would attract people's attention. I don't know if you remember back in 1979, 1980, when, of course, gold was just skyrocketing, and every time you listen to the stock announcements on the radio or in television, they were always talking about the price of gold and silver. They only do that when they want to focus your attention on that. Otherwise, why, they completely ignore it. Now they very seldom, companies will just give you a quick blurb on what the price of gold is doing, but they're not emphasizing the importance between a currency or fiat money and the price of gold. And so they can then manipulate gold by simply dumping it on the market and selling it in large amounts to keep the price down. But, of course, when enough people buy up, pretty soon they don't have any more gold to sell. The same thing is true with silver. They're manipulating silver. They're trying to manipulate the other commodities like copper and nickel and aluminum, but they're having real trouble manipulating these because there is a matter of supply and demand, and they don't have massive supplies to utilize and, you know, to dump on the market to drive the price down. The whole idea is, of course, we're going to drive the price down. And then, of course, the third world countries, which depend upon many of these metals, you know, for their income, many countries in Africa, South America, they depend upon the price of copper to fund their company, fund the welfare of the people. But if you actually can manipulate the price of copper down, we can buy it a lot cheaper. We can provide all sorts of manufactured items at lower cost. And the third world countries are deprived of a fair return. And they keep being poor, and the people there continue being impoverished, and they're basically working to benefit the people in the first world countries. So this is the way the game has been played for a long period of time. But one of these days they're going to lose control in their ability to really, of course, steal the wealth of the third world countries for the benefit of the first world countries. And I think that they're pretty well running out of silver at the present time. What are your thoughts on that, Melody?
I think the inventories for silver are low, but we have to remember there is a lot of silver out there. And I'm not sure anyone really knows the amount of silver that people own and people have bought, you know, when silver was $50. There's a lot of people that are owning silver. There's a lot of silver that is used in industry that can be taken out of the items and so forth and reused. So, but definitely it is an inventory that is shrinking. And so silver will be doing very well in the near future, as with gold, as all the precious metals, because they will all, you know, sort of like piggyback on one another. But what people can't forget is that gold is still the monetary metal. And I have people calling me and asking me every day, will silver outperform gold? Yes, it might. Percentage-wise, it might. But we can't forget that gold is the monetary metal. And then they will say, well, Melody, silver's monetary. Well, it was more of a monetary metal earlier in the 1900s and prior to that, but it turned industrial, and the percentage of it, the usage industrial versus monetary, was larger. So, but I believe it will turn back into a monetary metal, but at this point we still have to look at it as an industry metal, and when industry slows, in which it will slow more so than what it has now, it will impact those markets. All the silver, platinum, palladium, they're all industry metals, industrial metals, and they will be impacted to some degree when industry slows. And when people have a problem with a declining currency, with a declining dollar, their first choice will be gold. And perhaps if gold cannot be had, then they will switch to silver and any other commodity that might protect their purchasing power as the dollar falls. So that's what everyone has to remember when you're working on your portfolio and you're looking to invest in the precious metals. You have to keep that in mind. So often, you know, we talk about what a great investment something is, that silver could, yes, outperform gold by many, many percentages, but you have to remember and keep everything balanced in your portfolio, because that will protect your interests more so than going heavy. So often people hear a great investment and they think it's the lottery ticket. They think they're going to get rich quick. Well, you have to remember, you want to protect what you have first. Then when you have that protected, and then you can speculate and you can go into different areas, maybe different coins in your portfolio, and pick up items that will enhance your portfolio as gold trades and the different coins perform differently compared to with what's happening in the market. When we have the general populace come into the market, right now we have paper traders, we have professional investors that basically is propelling the price of gold along with the jewelry purchasers, you know, of the Asian countries. That's great. It's going up. But the general populace right here in this country, they're not involved as yet. That is what we're waiting for, because they're the ones that will make things go crazy. They will be the panic buyers, and that is in any bull market where you'll see the final stage to where they will hit, or the commodity will hit all-time highs and excel past that. And when you're looking at a hyperinflation situation, there really is no limit, and I really don't think anyone knows for sure exactly where gold can go. We can base it on inflation-adjusted rates from the 70s to where it can be anywhere from, you know, I've heard from 15 to 2,000. We hear people talk about where the Dow and gold will cross at 3,000. But if you take a look at Germany, gold was selling for trillions of dollars an ounce. So, you know, who knows? But to keep it in perspective and to keep it, you know, right where we're at today, we had a great correction today. Gold was down $13 today. We closed at $616, and it's just the perfect time to add to your portfolio. Summer is usually a slow time in gold. The markets are fairly flat. We had a little bit of a run up when we had the Middle East situation. And, of course, now that there's peace there, although I know we all know it's temporary, but it had a little bit of an impact with oil going down and the precious metals and gold in particular going down a little bit. And so we've seen that. So it's a great time to take advantage of the precious metals. And what's interesting, too, is I'm working with a professional trader, and he's looking to purchase some numismatic coins. And it's interesting to talk to people who are in stocks, who sell stocks and make a great living at it. And he wants to add numismatic coins. Now, when these people become involved in gold, they understand the bull market. They understand inflation. And they understand when inflation turns to deflation. And this is how they make their investments, even though it's in paper. They'll protect their assets in the real thing, but of course we know they make their money trading paper. But his goal is he plans to sell his numismatic coins when inflation turns to deflation and place the proceeds into bullion coins, and that's what we recommend here. But he believes that there will be an evolution into a hyperinflationary environment. And he believes the run in gold will end around 2012 and 2015. Well, that's just his guess. I think he's a little late. I think we might see it end a little sooner than that, but you know, I'm not sure until we move a little further on.
Go ahead.
I just thought that was important to know that when Wall Street becomes involved in gold, I mean, that's when the general populace becomes involved in gold.
Well, of course, I know you spend a couple of times a week having Bob Chapman on your program. And I think Bob is a very, very provocative individual. We love having him on because he's actually watching the monetary increments. How can you tell what the Fed is really doing, what the people who control our monetary system are doing? Well, you watch the M1, you watch the M2, and you watch the M3, which is a monetary increment, includes all the money and credit in dollars that is available throughout the entire world, and the money, American dollars, that have been created in foreign bank accounts. But, of course, the government's no longer publishing M3. They say it's too expensive. Well, that's not it at all. They don't want you to know what's really going on. What Bob Chapman points out, and Bob's been at this for 44 years, is that we're increasing the M3 equivalent by about 12% a year, which is the basis then of the true inflation, or I should say the loss of purchasing power of our currency. But he points out that in other countries like Russia, they're up in the 40%. In India, they're 20%. In Great Britain, they're 15 or 18%. The whole world is inflating their currency, and of course we're heading towards a big bust. And of course, what will that bring? Well, I think that they're going to solve the problem when we move into World War III. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Melody Cederstrom, and I certainly, I'm sure you enjoy conversations with Bob. Do you have any thoughts at all about what I just said?
Well, he's absolutely right. He's wonderful to listen to. He's got a great newsletter, and people should take advantage of getting a complimentary copy to his newsletter. And but it's absolutely right. They took M3 off the market, where it's difficult to gauge exactly what they're printing. But you have to remember, that's the only thing they can do to stay afloat. They're not any different than a person and an individual who's gotten themselves in hot water. If they spend too much than what they make, they're going to have to beg, borrow, and steal in order to keep afloat. And that exactly is what this administration is doing. And like you pointed out, the rest of the world, you know, when you have a fiat currency, you can do that. And so that is exactly what we're seeing, and that is exactly why we're going to be heading into hyperinflation. And I've heard Bob even mention, like, we're already in hyperinflation, but I don't think to the degree of which we will see in the near future.
Now, of course, Bob's comment is, you'll be able to tell what the future is going to hold by watching this equivalent of M3, not only in America, but throughout the world, and I think we can anticipate that all of the central banks of the world will work in concert, some perhaps like Russia, really creating tremendous amounts of money to develop their internal economy and to give them a dominant position in the world, and it works pretty well for a time. India, of course, can begin to develop this nation of a billion people by increasing their money and credit by 20% a year. Now, that eventually will be reflected in inflation, but not for a few years. But Bob's comment is that we will know when things are going to turn away from inflation towards deflation by watching these figures. And when they begin to contract the money and credit available throughout the world, not only, of course, do they do here, you know, right now we're running about 12%, which is the real rate of inflation. But when we see that begin to contract, and they will contract it, and they can contract it by changing the reserve requirements, by making money more dear and difficult to create, and, of course, credit more difficult to create, then it takes a year to a year and a half before the economy turns into deflation. It will either have to do that, or it simply totally destroy the value of the currencies throughout the world, because no currency has anything behind it. Well, I guess the Swiss do to an extent, and there is some backing to the euro, but, you know, at least if we can depend upon Bob and others to watch and see what's really happening to this M3 figure, which they will not actually publish, but which Bob is able to track down by extensive study of all the various monetary increments out there, then we are no, and as soon as it begins to turn, then we have about a year before we go into deflation. And, of course, with that, of course, will become terrible suffering for everyone. But right now, they're keeping the economy going, you know, and certainly the housing bubble has pretty well popped. But they can artificially manipulate the stock market. They can control the price of their various commodities. And as long as the world is stable, as long as we don't plunge into war, as long as they can keep the free trade going back and forth, the system is going to work. But what happens if there's a major catastrophe, a collapse of, say, some of the major hedge funds, a collapse in the derivative market, somebody makes a wrong play, and any one of these things is a financial time bomb just waiting to happen? Well, our guest is Melody Cederstrom this evening, and our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Melody, would you like to get your telephone number, your website out, and what will happen if people do get in touch with you?
Well, my phone number is 1-800-375-4188. And again, that number is 800-375-4188. And the website is Discount Gold and AND Silver Trading. That is Discount Gold and AND Silver Trading .net. And we do things a little bit different here when you call us. I mean, if you're a seasoned buyer of gold, of course, we provide great prices, great service. We have a very quick turnaround time. Usually most of my clients will have their product within 10 working days if they get their payment off the day the trade is made or the next day. So we do have a very quick turnaround time. For those that are just beginning to get involved in gold, silver, and the precious metals, we like to talk to you and find out what your investment objective is, what you want your gold to do for you. We try to educate you on the various products, from bullion to the numismatics to silver to platinum and to palladium, how much you should have in your portfolio. And we take that information, and then you become involved in putting together your portfolio. We don't sell a one-coin-fits-all. I don't believe there is a coin that does that, because everyone is different. Everyone has a different plan, and everyone has a different budget. So many times I might recommend and talk about a particular coin that has done extremely well, but maybe it doesn't really fit in someone else's budget. And but that's up to you to decide. It's up to the client and the customer to decide. And so it's my job to explain the various coins, how they work, how gold works. And I think we're one of the few companies that do that. It's just easy to sell one coin to all, and we just don't do that. And it's worked out very well over the years. We're in our 13th corporate year, and we have a lot of our goal is to have repeat customers, and our customers don't get upset with us because we provide a great product, we provide great service, and a great price. So they can come to us on a regular basis, and they trust us because we do that, and we work very hard at it, and we prove ourselves, and I don't take, we make mistakes, but not very many.
Okay, fine.
Well, my typing is not the best all the time, but no, we do a great job right here.
Well, I certainly hear very good things about you, and I should mention that Melody does support Radio Liberty, but we support Melody because she thinks that she takes good care of the people that that do business with her. Well, our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment about the things we're talking about. You know, most people do not understand that at one time money had an intrinsic value. That was the reason that, of course, down through the centuries, had picked gold as the primary monetary metal, and then, of course, 100 years ago, silver was a monetary metal. In fact, it really was up until here in the United States, up until about 1965. But what people don't understand is that the people who control the world's monetary system don't want you to have any means to protect your wealth. In fact, Alan Greenspan wrote about that back in 1966 in a essay he wrote when he was associated with the Ayn Rand Institute. In fact, that complete text of the letter is included in our Financial Tsunami syllabus, which we recommend people. But you know, Alan Greenspan said the secret of the welfare state is they don't want you to have any means of protecting your wealth. And if there were a means of protecting your wealth, then they'd have to make it illegal as they had with gold. And of course, in 1966, it was still illegal for you to have gold. Gold has become legal since then. You can own it as a U.S. citizen. But, of course, they've artificially kept the price of gold down through manipulation. The question is, at what time do they begin to lose their control? Certainly, I can remember when gold was $35 an ounce. I can remember when it up to about $250, went back down to about $100. It was sometime in the time when I was over in South Africa, sometime in the mid-70s, and it went up to about $850. Almost, I think the futures were about $1,000 an ounce. They went up to $850 in probably 1979, 1980. And then, of course, they beat it down again. But, of course, the day will come when they're not going to be able to continue doing that. And, of course, gold will eventually become the basis of a currency system, because there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has survived. They always collapse, and with that, destroy the value of everybody's savings. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Melody Cederstrom. And, well, you know, certainly has things slowed down a little bit since that spectacular rise in the price of gold and silver here about a month and a half, 2 months ago?
Yes, we did. We had that major correction from the intraday 7:30 down to about 5:50 where it closed. And it came back, and we saw it hedge up to over to 6:50. But that it is a real strong resistance level, and had a hard time getting over and staying over. And we saw the correction down to 6:16. So it wants to go, but you're right about one thing, Dr. Stan. People don't understand the value of gold. I mean, it's important, and the powers to be, the elitists, they realize the importance of gold. That is why they took it away from us in 33. That is why they didn't want us to own it for so many years. And because gold means freedom, and we certainly know that they don't want us to have any freedom, is what we've seen them take our freedoms these past couple of years. So if you want financial freedom, it's very important to get gold and silver in your portfolio. It will protect your purchasing power. And I have many customers who they can't see past, they understand the strength of the powers to be, the elitists, and they understand, they've seen it manipulated these past years and what they can do to it. But something will come to where they will not be able to manipulate it, and people will wake up, and people will realize they need it to have in their portfolio. And they can't control it, and we have to be patient. But it is the opportune time in order to add more gold and silver, or at least begin purchasing gold and silver at this point in time with this correction. And people need to compare gold to the higher numbers and not to 250. Because I hear people say, well, you know, is it going to go to 250? I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm pretty confident to say that it's not going to 250. And even if it does go to 250, that means our dollar has gotten stronger. That means if it goes to 250, you have to believe that our dollar is stronger, our economy is stronger, there's jobs in this country, wages are rising, and things are better because our dollar is stronger and it's purchasing things. Well, I don't think anyone listening to the program believes that. I don't believe we can go back and have a stronger dollar until the problems that we talk about are addressed, and whether they play out over whether they play out.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. My telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And one more time, Melody, let's get your telephone number and your webpage up.
It's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
And the telephone number, you always give it two times.
800-375-4188. And if anyone would like to email me, they can do so at discountgoldand, again, that is A-N-D, silver@yahoo.com. And that is for email. If you have a question or a comment, and if you would like me to review your portfolio, you can email me or call me. And again, the email address is discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, I think that since we see that, you know, that they brought in from Goldman Sachs and Company, Mr. Paulson. Now, Mr. Paulson was, I believe, was the president of Goldman Sachs, who gave up a $40 million job. $40 million a year job to become Secretary of the Treasury at $180,000 a year. You have to ask yourself, why would anybody, give up such a good-paying job for such a poor-paying job? And I'm sure you have to understand he's doing it so he'll make a lot of money. Goldman Sachs is one of the most powerful financial houses in the United States. It has extensive holdings in China. It's doing everything they can to build up the economy of communist China. Goldman Sachs has tremendous holdings as far as gold and silver. They're shorting them. They're selling them short to manipulate the price down. They manipulate the market. Certainly, they're one of the most powerful organizations, financial organizations in our nation. In fact, Paulson is talking about bringing one of his former assistants from Goldman Sachs to become his primary assistant at the Treasury Department. And what you're seeing is Goldman Sachs taking control of the United States Department of Treasury. But don't feel bad. Certainly it was during the Clinton administration. They brought in Robert Rubin from Goldman and Sachs. And that was at the time of the Mexican financial crisis. And Mexico was threatening to default on many loans to a major American bank, specifically Goldman Sachs. So what happened? Why the American government let... I forgot whether it was $40 or $20 billion, something like that, to Mexico. They paid off the banks, and of course, I don't know whether we ever got the money back again. But Robert Rubin of Goldman Sachs, the Secretary of the Treasury at that time, had a big grin on his face. This is how the system really works, and these people who come from major financial institutions and take over various departments of our government are doing it because they're going to make out very, very well. As the American people are gradually impoverished, as our industries are shipped to other nations, as our jobs are outsourced to other nations, as immigrants are being brought in with special visas, visas suggesting that they have unique skills, and they're taking the jobs here at lower and lower levels, and as the gradual living standards of the American people are being progressively ground down as part of a plan. It's called the Earth Charter. You can get it on the Internet, where they talk about the redistribution, or I think the term is equitable distribution, of wealth within nations and between nations. That's point 10A of the Earth Charter, equitable distribution of wealth within nations and between nations. Between nations, well, that means that everybody will have the same income, except, of course, for the ruling elite, the Mr. Paulsons and the others of that category. And then, of course, between nations, why, that's how you raise our living standards to that of the Mexican peasant. People said this could not be going on, and yet, if you look around, you should be able to see it. And if the average individual really understands what's happening, Melody, that there are people in our government who have no loyalty to America or to preserving our high living standards, that really intentionally do intend to lower the standards of living of our people?
Absolutely, and I do believe that there's more and more people out there that are beginning to wake up to, perhaps they don't understand the whole picture, and as great as that picture is, but they are being hurt in their pocketbook. And I believe when we had other situations in this country in the 70s and 80s and 90s, the recessions and so forth, we had a younger population. We had a younger population that wasn't dependent on, I mean, we could go out and find jobs and, you know, we were healthy. We could work two or three jobs and, you know, it wasn't no big deal. But this time around when we go through the depression that we're going to hit, we have an older population. We have a boomer generation that they have lived their whole lives built around their pensions that they're expecting to get. And we talk about GM, we talk about pension reform, we talk about how the pensions won't be there or they'll be drastically reduced. And then when we're heading into an area when we have a declining currency, they're going to be very uncomfortable. And I believe perhaps they're seeing some of these signs to how they will be affected. And they're beginning to see that, I mean, the prices on things are just going higher and higher and higher, and their wages are not increasing. So this time around, it's not going to be easy to weather through the depression and what we face. And plus, I don't believe in the past have we ever been in the situation like we are in today. I mean, at least before people saved and they weren't quite in as much in debt as they are today. I mean, their debt today is survival debt. They use their debt to pay, to buy groceries, to buy gasoline, to get them to and back from work. Their survival debt, their credit cards are being used for their medical bills for their prescriptions and so forth. So it's a lot different. And so it's, and again, I can't stress enough that you need to think about what you have, where your investments are at. Where is your, what is your money, and where is your money working for you? And at least protect some of it. If you don't have any of it protected by gold, get some of it protected by gold. I mean, a portfolio needs to be balanced. So when one area of your portfolio declines, you have something that's going to take its place, and that is gold. And so you need to have it balanced, and it's so important.
Oh, I certainly agree with you. I believe you need to be diversified in gold and silver and platinum and a few other things. But certainly gold and silver are two of the mainstays of anybody's effort at times like this. Now, ordinarily, if we were in a country with a stable currency, I would say, you know, you'd have a little bit of gold and silver, you know, just in case of a currency collapse. But most of it would be invested in perhaps in property or in stocks and bonds or in other things that have an excellent chance of going up in price. But the thing is, right now, we do not have a stable currency. We are certainly approaching the very top, where they're going to have to begin cutting back on the availability of the fiat currency. And when that happens, why, of course, you begin moving into a deflation with real economic problems. And you need to protect yourself, you know, for the difficult times that I believe lie ahead. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. During the last hour, of course, we talked to Mr. Webster Tarpley, and you could tell from the tone of his voice, those of you who heard the program, he is so concerned about the possibility of an American attack on either Iran or Syria or both of them. And George Bush seems to be intent upon leading us into even a larger wars. And the people who control George Bush want that. There are other, of course, forces out there. They realize, of course, the disaster this could lead to. But George Bush, of course, is the President of the United States. He really doesn't care what Congress wants. He doesn't care what the American people want. He seems to be motivated by a desire to expand the war in the Middle East. We never should have been there to begin with. If we do expand the war, why, our troops will be sitting ducks there, sitting in Iran. They'll be such excellent targets for the Iranians if we attack Iran. And George doesn't seem to be too worried about that. Under any circumstances, should we get into another major war in the Middle East, I think it would have a disastrous effect upon our currency and the willingness of other countries to take our currency, and everything is built upon trust. The American dollar is the major reserve currency of the world. Should other nations begin to lose confidence in America? Should they begin to sense that America maybe cannot win the war in the Middle East? Should they begin to sense the fact that during this recent confrontation in Lebanon, Israel was simply a surrogate for the American government, just as, of course, Hezbollah was a surrogate for the Iranians, and in the final analysis, the Iranians won the war, or Hezbollah won the war, and Israel has had to pull back, having suffered tremendous casualties and lost at least one of their armored divisions, or the equivalent of an armored division. So, you know, and should anything else happen, and America suddenly, even though it may still have tremendous nuclear capacity, seem to be sensed as a nation that really cannot, of course, dominate the world, would people still want to use our currency as their reserve currency, fearing that something might happen to America and its ability to back up its own currency? I think we can get to real problems financially. Everything is a matter of perception. And with other countries begin to lose confidence in America, or want to retaliate against America for our foreign policies, I think it could have serious repercussions on the stability of the American dollar. What are your thoughts on that, Melody?
Well, I agree, and we have to remember that the rest of the world basically was forced to use our currency. I mean, we pretty much said, you know, this is our currency, and it became the world reserve currency. And so they were forced, and Everything you're right about the foreign policy. It's just a matter, I mean, we can feel, we can see, we can hear all the things that are coming from the rest of the world, and they certainly don't like America. And you know, if one of them just happens to get up on the wrong side of the bed any day of the week, they have the power. They have the power to financially ruin us by just unloading the dollars that they're holding. And so and this administration is, I mean, they really don't care. I mean, they have an agenda, and they're going to complete it. And someone was telling me today that the elections this coming November will probably be the most important elections this country has ever had. And so it's important, too, that the listeners do get out and vote. And I, already my clients are saying, well, what difference does it make, you know? You know, they're the same and blah, blah, blah that you hear every election. Well, that's why, because we don't go out and vote, and that's just a small part. And, you know, I don't know whether it does any good or not with a with the fixing of the votes and the fraud, but we still have to do it, and it's the only chance that we really have at this point in time. And so you do have to get out and vote. But we are on this path, and things will have to purge, systems will have to purge, and things will have to unfold before they get better.
Amen to that. And, Chris, the thing is that right now we have a one-party system in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. We have the Republicans control the executive branch, the Senate. They control the House of Representatives. I'd like to see Democrats controlling the legislature. And, of course, we have two more years with George Bush's administration, or I should say Dick Cheney's administration, because George Bush is simply, well, of course, when, you know, when Dick Cheney pulls the string, right, George Bush's arms move. Or his mouth moves. Dick Cheney is the real force behind this. But what we need in Washington, D.C. today is gridlock.
Yes.
What we need is to create a situation where Congress can't get anything accomplished. In fact, I think it was Mark Twain or Will Rogers who said no man's property or purse are safe when Congress is in session. What we need to do is get both parties there fighting back and forth with against one another so they can't pass legislation that will further weaken our economy, that will spend our money, and, of course, take away our freedom.
But what concerns me about that is, you know what, Bush does, Bush and Cheney, they really don't care. Today you had the judge that ruled that the government's warrantless surveillance program is unconstitutional and ordered an immediate end to it. Well, what comes out of Washington is, hey, we think it's legal and we're just going to continue to do it. So, I mean, they don't listen. You know, they just do what they want to do. So, you know, I too believe we need to get out and vote, but if you get Democrats in there and Republicans in there bickering, I don't know how much it'll do, but I guess we just have to try.
I think that's what we can do. I think you're absolutely right. I think this is going to be one of the most important elections that we've ever had. And certainly there are many things that the Democrats stand for that I dislike intensely.
Mm-hmm.
But I think right now, the biggest issue, of course, is the economy. The biggest issue, of course, is the war and preventing George Bush from getting us into World War III, which he is, I think, intent upon doing. And whether he's going to do it before November, that's to try to rally the people behind him. Because if you notice, after this phony recent terrorist threat, this is one where they took the toothpaste and the hair gel and all these things away from the American people and people throughout the world after the terrorists in Pakistan and England had been arrested, not before, but after they've been arrested, when they weren't going to be putting these things in. And then, of course, this whole thing is coming out to be a great scam. But it doesn't matter. George Bush's popularity went up 3% from about 30 to 33%. That was a big jump in his popularity. I bet if he got us into a war with Iran, he'd get another 7 points out there on the popularity scale. He loves to be popular and loves to have people watch it to like him. And, of course, unfortunately, when you get into a war, there is a tendency on the part of the people to rally behind the administration, even if they have created the war, as FDR did, certainly during the Second World War, and certainly as Truman did during the Korean War, and certainly as they did during the Vietnam War, both Certainly, Lyndon Johnson expanded the war, and his popularity went right on up. This is the great tragedy of where we stand today. I fear that George Bush is, whether he'll do it before the election or after the election, I'm not certain, but it appears that this is their intent. I think the only thing that's going to stop it is an American people who said, we're not going to put up with this. We don't want to have our boys sent overseas to fight and die in a war on terrorism. When you don't believe there's a war on terrorism, Mr. Bush, because you have steadfastly refused to seal our borders, if you really thought there was a war on terrorism, why, of course, you would have sealed the border right after September 11th, and you didn't do it. And you didn't arm the pilots, and you wouldn't allow racial profiling. Do you really think there's a war on terrorism, or are you using it to take away the freedom of the American people? Our guest this evening, Melody Cederstrom. Once again, your telephone number, Melody?
1-800-375-4188.
We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Melody, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, just to mention one thing about, you know, what's really sad, Dr. Stan, is I think if you went out and pulled the American people out there, they would think that doing putting a nuke in Iran, it would be better than sending the boys over there. And that's what, you know what, that's what scares me, that mentality, most of all, because if they believe that, they will rally around the administration for a war over there. And particularly when they're being hit very strong with high gasoline prices. And again, they feel that that's what we need to do in order to lower our prices without truly understanding the whole problem. And it is truly a sad case. But for all your gold and silver needs, 1-800-375-4188. We do a great job here. We got some great prices. And I know your listeners enjoy having Bob Chapman on your program. And they can call me, and with purchases of certain coins, they can actually earn a free subscription to the International Forecaster. So we do that with Bob. So all they have to do is call 1-800-375-4188, and they can visit the website, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if you'd like to email me, you can do so at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
When Bob gives out his telephone number to get a free copy of his International Forecaster, is that your telephone number?
Yes.
Okay, fine. I sort of suspected it was.
Yes, it is.
All right, fine. Well, I think that's great. I think Bob's a great asset. He's a great asset for you. He's a great asset for me. But the major thing is that he knows how to ferret out these figures. So the people who listen to our programs, your radio program and my radio program, will know exactly what is going on, what the people who are controlling the monetary system are doing. And as long as they continue expanding the money and credit, and of course it's primarily at the present time, it is the debt currency that they're creating artificially, but the credit they're creating, as long as they continue doing that, the economy will continue to expand. But if they do it too long, of course they destroy the value of the currency, so they at some time, and how soon that will be we don't know, but at some time they're going to have to start cutting back. Hopefully Bob will be on top of that, will let us know. And then, of course, we'll have about a year to a year and a half before the effect of deflation sets in, and we're going to have a real jump on the rest of the people. So just keep listening to Melody's program and Radio Liberty here. And if you need any help, why, give Melody a call. Melody Cederstrom, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me.
Good night. God
bless.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoy our programs with Melody and Bob and some of the others. We like to have them on and try to keep you abreast of what's going on. And never hesitate to give us a call during the programs. We always love to hear from you. I simply want to point out, if you have not yet read my syllabus on the financial tsunami and heard our talk on it, I think it's an excellent overall view of exactly what is going on financially in the world today. And then, of course, if you have not yet certainly got our material on the hidden agenda, that's how they're poisoning us with fluoride. There's a talk, the hidden agenda. There is the video. Pardon me, there's a syllabus that goes with that. You can get them separately, of course, but you really would want to get them together. Certainly our talk on Iraq, the untold story, why we're really in Iraq, and and then the syllabus goes with that. That gives you all the documentation you need to discuss these things intelligently. And then to understand the spiritual forces which are energizing the things that are going on. Why, you certainly want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get a new book we're carrying called Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil. And it sounds sort of dramatic, but I will tell you, the book will change your outlook. It's basically the catalog story of five exorcisms recorded by the Catholic Church. And the story is told by Malachi Martin, who actually read this, researched the Catholic archives, and came up with these five stories. And, of course, at the time when we first read the book back in 1980, had no idea who Malachi Martin was, but subsequently we got to know him, and we have a four-interview set with Malachi called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. That's The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and you certainly can get the book, the four-tape set, or you can get the Malachi Martin special. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a new DVD. It's called Rape of the Soul, and it's certainly the movie that was put together by Michael Colacci. I have a small part in it. The movie has been shown on the large screen all across America in many of the major markets, and now it's available on DVD. Going into these imprints, these are mind control inserts that are putting into Catholic art, occult, pornographic, and frankly demonic inputs, and you'll certainly want to see the movie. It's almost 3 hours. Michael does a great job on it, and everything's been done to suppress this information. Why? Because they don't want the Catholics of this country, or anybody else for that matter, to realize that they're using Catholic art to corrupt the morals of the people and destroy the very soul of our children. Again, the DVD is Rape of the Soul, and then, of course, we have the other items that we've talked about, certainly Joe Schimmel's latest production, The Da Vinci Con, Hollywood's War on America. Hollywood's War on America, The Da Vinci Con, and then as for The Da Vinci Con, they sold their souls for rock and roll, and there really is going to the demonic influence within our music today. And then, of course, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, then Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. There's so many items that we do have that will introduce you to the spiritual battle behind what's going on. And, of course, if you get our Financial Tsunami syllabus, we take you into the spiritual forces behind the monetary system. And people say, spiritual forces behind the monetary system? Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be amazed when you hear my talk. And, of course, when you read the syllabus. Remember, they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we hope you go to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like to get a free copy of one of our newsletters, they are available from Radio Liberty. If you'd like to get the Berkey water filters, we do carry them, both the Big Berkey and the Berkey Light. And, of course, we carry a number of the other items, health items. But mainly, of course, we hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out 5 hours every day. By radio, by internet, by satellite, by shortwave, trying to convince people that we're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men.
questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention. There are many now who see the veil lie.
Good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation. It is Thursday, the 17th of August, 2006. And yes, the news is starting to come out, folks, and now the people of the world are recognizing that there is that line in the sand. And America better catch up quickly and realize that it is true and ask themselves the question, where is it? This is Dave Onquist.
And Joyce Riley, and today we have news that is pretty surprising. Well, first of all, Christopher Bolin has been arrested, reporter for the American Free Press. Yes, yesterday we reported that he had been beaten up at that time, but to our knowledge, we had not received news that he had been arrested. He has been arrested and was in jail last night. Another front. Cy Hirsch now says the United States started the war.